Welcome to Out There with TJ Ryan. It's strange. It's unusual. It's mysterious. It's out there, out there, out there, out there. And now your host, TJ Ryan.
Thanks for joining me on another show today. Out there, TJ Ryan, my guest, is calling in from, it's some little ghost town, Jacobsville area. It's in Upper Michigan. Her name is Lisa Scheel. She's been on the show before. Hi, Lisa. How you doing?
I'm good.
Thanks for coming on.
It's always fun.
That's what you say, isn't it? Now, you have a book out right now, which officially... Now, is this officially out, the book, or...?
Yes, it came out last month.
So I don't have like a pirate copy here, do
I? Nope. It's official.
I've got a pirate copy. I'm going to sell it. It's called The Evolution Conspiracy. It's volume one, exposing life's inexplicable origins and the cult of Darwin. Boy, if I'm going to join a cult, you know, probably won't be Darwin's cult. That doesn't sound like a lot of fun. But we're going to... Now, how did you... First of all, let's talk about you, Lisa, a little bit. You're an author. You're an investigator. Can you give us some of your background as well, please?
Okay, well, I am author of 5 published books. I was previously the president of the Upper Peninsula Publishers and Authors Association here in Michigan. I was also previously the chief investigator for Michigan's chapter of the Mutual UFO Network. I have a master's degree in library science. And I've been writing for a long time.
You've been writing quite a while, and of course I got your other book that you sent me was The Backyard Bigfoot, which some of you will hear this and snicker, and stop it right now, because it's, you know what?
Well, Backyard Bigfoot was a finalist in Forward Magazine.
Exactly.
2006 Book of the Year Award.
And this program only talks to the best, right? We only talk to the best authors, right? No, but you know, the thing is, you did a lot of research on that book, and you talked to a lot of different people, too, that were witnesses, but you also took a scientific approach to try to connect how these things are around. And that's the same thing. Your book, you researched, how long did you research to write before you wrote this book?
I've been researching evolution for about 8 years now.
Now, what got you interested in that this could be not accurate, that the evolutionary theories are not accurate? What made you interested in that at all?
Well, like most people, I accepted the story about evolution, you know, that we all evolved from ape-like ancestors and all of that. But as I got into college, I started to wonder about stuff. And then after college, I decided to write my first book, which was a novel called The Hunt for Bigfoot. And I started researching Bigfoot, and I realized there could be a connection with evolution here. So I started looking into evolution, too. And one of the first books I read was called Forbidden Archaeology.
Mm-hmm.
And that, excuse me, that talks about the evidence that human beings have been around for a long time, millions of years. And that got me thinking about it, and I did a little more research. Now, for The Hunt for Bigfoot, I was mainly interested in human origins and how that might relate to Bigfoot. But over the years, I have kept researching evolution. I'm interested in it. I think it's really fascinating. And I'm always wondering, well, when a new evidence comes out, will this be more conclusive than the previous evidence? And it always seems like it on the surface, but then when you look into it, there are holes in it.
There's always holes.
Not as solid as they claim it is in their press releases.
So they can never seem to prove it. And also, like you told me, and I wasn't aware of any of this because I never really studied it, they can never seem to agree. There's so many that disagree on the same subject.
Right, and if you bring up the fact that there's so much disagreement among scientists, they say, oh, well, that's a normal part of science. Yeah. Well, that's true, it should be, but at the same time, they try and gloss over the disagreement.
Mm.
You know, as, for instance, a while back I was reading a Scientific American issue that was all about evolution because it was for this year, which is the 200th anniversary of Charles Darwin's birth and the 150th anniversary of the publication of his book, The Origin of Species. So they had this issue all about evolution, and they had 2 back-to-back articles written by scientists. First one says, natural selection is the driving force of evolution. It's vital, you know, it's really important, and everyone agrees on this. The next article says natural selection has a minor effect at best. You know, it's not really that important, and everyone agrees upon that. It can't be both. Everyone can't agree on both.
Right, absolutely.
But everybody wants to say, everybody agrees with me.
Mm-hmm. Because it depends who's telling the story, I guess. Just like, you know, they say history is determined by whoever wins the war. So right. We believe our history to be accurate, and how much of it has been exaggerated or maybe have never even happened, you know, because, and I'm not saying that, but that's what we do. I think we, you know, historians will look back even at this time period and they'll want to romanticize
right.
or maybe change it in a way. Well, I think the people that lived back in 2010 or 9, they were like this back then. And it's like,
well, I think you can already see that happening now. People looking back at certain events that are maybe
I know, and you
five,
know,
10 years in the past.
You and I know because we lived through it, but yet they're telling a different story.
Right.
And I'm thinking, if they do that now, what have they been doing? My biggest thing, you know, I'm not into the scientific end of it, but I really am into the historical. And just by doing that, I've learned, and certainly I don't research it like you do, Lisa, but I've learned that there's a lot of lies that have been told or exaggerations. And if that is that, if it's just going on through history in the last few hundred years or 1,000 years, what else has been going on?
Well, of course, the further back you go in history, too, you have the problem of, do we understand the language
mm-hmm.
accurately?
Yeah.
I mean, even if you're talking about the English language, if you look at Shakespeare, how much our language has changed since then, and that's, you know, a few hundred years.
Right.
You know, you go back even farther, we're talking about dead languages that nobody speaks anymore, nobody writes,
mm-hmm.
and you have to wonder, are we understanding it accurately? Is the way we translate it entirely accurate?
So what it boils down to, Lisa, I think I know what you're saying, that nobody really knows anything. Well, none of us really know for sure. None of us really know for sure, do
we? Nothing is certain.
Nothing is 100% certain. Now, we are going to take a break in just a couple of minutes, but part of the title of your book is called The Cult of Darwin, Origins and the Cult of Darwin. So explain, what do you mean by the Cult of Darwin?
Well, there's a group of people who call themselves the New Atheists, and they don't believe in God, but they believe in evolution. And so Darwin has become like their God.
Mm.
You know, they worship Darwin.
Okay.
And you know, Darwin was right. And, they love to point out his predictions that were correct. Of course, if you look at it, it's usually, well, it's correct because of the way they interpret it.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been wrong about many things, too. In fact, he had a theory about how the Loch Ness was formed, the geology of it, and that was totally wrong.
Hmm. You know,
because he didn't know much about geology. And when Darwin, most people don't realize that Charles Darwin was not a scientist. He had a degree in theology, and he was friends with a lot of scientists and undoubtedly learned from them, but he was not a scientist.
So today he would have been laughed at, probably.
Yeah, today they say if you don't have a degree in biology, then you have no right to discuss this stuff. You have no right to say anything about evolution. Well, according to that standard, Darwin had no right to write his book, The Origin of Species, or any of the things he wrote.
Don't you think it's funny, though, that there was a time when creationism was taught in the schools, and I don't know if you remember the Scopes, was it called the Scopes Monkey Trial?
Right.
And wasn't he on trial for teaching evolution?
Right.
And so at one time, we weren't even open to the possibility of evolution. And then now it's kind of...
Now it's gone the opposite way.
Opposite way. So now what you're saying...
You're not allowed to have anything except evolution.
Yeah. And you're saying...
You're not allowed to doubt it.
All sides should be presented, right?
Right.
Let me ask you a personal question. Did you write this book out of your religious faith? Were you trying to prove that there is a God? I mean, was that one of the reasons?
No. Absolutely not.
Had nothing to do
with it. My only purpose in writing the book is to present the evidence, along with my analysis of it, but present the evidence so that people can read it and decide for themselves what to believe.
Let me ask you this. Do you feel that most people, well, how would you know this? This is kind of a speculation, but do you think that a lot of people that are scientists or do you think there's a lot of them that are atheists, evolutionists?
Among the scientists?
among scientists? You seem like you hear more and more of that, people that are...
Yeah, and there have been polls. In fact, there was one that came out recently. I think it was Pew Research Center did a poll. And they polled the average person and scientists. And scientists are... They do not represent the general public in terms of their demographic. They are overwhelmingly liberal and predominantly atheist.
Hmm.
Although most polls show that about 40% of them believe in evolution and God, it still leaves a lot of them that are atheists. And the so-called new atheists are the most vocal proponents of evolution and the most obnoxious about it, ridiculing and attacking anyone who disagrees with them.
We're going to take a break. My guest is Lisa Scheel, and her book right now is The Evolution Conspiracy. If you want to check it out, go to her website. What is the website we can go to, Lisa?
EvolutionConspiracy.com.
It's a conspiracy, I'm telling you.
Out there.
We'll get back to the show in just a moment. If you want to find out more about Lisa Scheel, I've talked to her for quite a while now. Matter of fact, we have probably at least two other interviews on this site as well, where she talks about different phenomena. She's had her own personal experiences with many things. And you can check out her latest book at evolutionconspiracies.com. But don't forget to check out backyardphenomena.com. And one of the books that she wrote was called Backyard Bigfoot. She spent years and years researching. One thing I'll say about Lisa is that she's very thorough, and she also doesn't speculate a whole lot. I'm always trying to get her to speculate, and she might go, well, my own opinion, but I think she tries to research and go with facts as much as possible. Hope you enjoy the program.
It's out there, out there, out there, out there.
Lisa Scheel calling in. Well, she doesn't actually live in Jacobsville. You live out in the country quite a bit, don't you?
Yes, in the remote, desolate woods.
How much land does your family have out there?
40 acres.
And you don't have any neighbors at all around you?
There's a neighbor who lives about a third of a mile away.
Okay.
But other than that, there's nobody close by.
And so, I got to believe it's a real beautiful setting out there, real peaceful.
It's gorgeous.
And do you feel like any kind of... I know when I get into the deeper woods, or even just to anywhere near living things, I just feel like a renewal, an energy I can't explain. Do you ever feel that way?
Yeah, there's a kind of mystical feeling to the deep woods that you don't get in the city.
It almost like, to me, it recharges. Of course, you're probably used to it now, but it like recharges me. I think that's why a lot of people go in the woods. They kind of get like, they feel this energy.
Right, you get away from the noise of the towns and the lights. You can actually see the stars at night.
Yeah, and other things as well.
Right.
Yep. By the way, Lisa, in one of our previous interviews, talked about, and we'll get back to the book in just a moment, but you talked about seeing a UFO back in when you lived in Texas, right?
That was the biggest UFO I saw, but I've seen other strange things, too.
But you saw one with your mom back then.
Right.
You and your mother saw it, and you both had a little bit of missing time.
Right, about 20, 25 minutes of missing time.
And you both gave birth to alien babies? Is that what I know? Is that true or no?
Well, if you see little green children wandering around, you know where they came from.
Oh, okay. Hey, little Lisa, come here. But seriously, they did both see something, and you both remembered. The next thing you know, how much time was missing, right? How much
about
time?
About 25 minutes.
Yeah, that's kind of bizarre, isn't it? And did you ever wonder what maybe happened to you in that time period?
Yeah, I wondered about it, but
I don't spend
a lot of time thinking about it anymore.
You didn't ever want to get, like, hypnotized and see if you could remember that?
No. I mean, I have trouble with the idea of hypnosis.
So you don't think that?
Because it's so easy to manipulate it, either
that's
on purpose
true.
Or by accident.
But do you believe that we could possibly, if we relaxed, we could go back and pull something out of a memory?
I suppose it's possible, but...
See, you got to look at everything scientifically. That's what it is!
Hypnosis is such an... really untested technique.
You know, yeah, I know there's kind of a bit of a debate on that as well. But, because I always think everything that ever happens to us, conscious or unconscious or for sleeping, it's all recorded somewhere within us. We got to hear it, so it's got to be somewhere in the brain. It's got to be locked somewhere within the body. So I feel if there's a way to tap into that, we'd know, right? And that's my little theory. What do you think?
Well, we don't understand our brains very well, or our memories.
So you're saying that's a bunch of baloney, right?
There could be a way, but right now, scientifically, we just don't understand.
Well, at least you take that approach. You don't jump on board like I do and go, hey, that makes sense. I'm going to go with that. That looks good to me. That's what most of us do. Most of us do not probably explore it as detailed as you do, and we go, hey, that's a good belief. I'm going to adopt that right there. I'm going to adopt that belief, right? So, and then also now, you've had experience with Bigfoot. I mean, and again, this is a topic that a lot of people snicker at because they think, well, come on, that doesn't exist. Well, how many, before you wrote your book, how many people did you talk to? You must have talked to a lot of different individuals, right?
About Bigfoot sightings?
Yeah.
I mostly talked to people after I wrote the book.
Okay. But you investigated.
Mainly about my personal experiences. But, and afterwards, I got into talking to witnesses, some of whom had really strange experiences.
So how many, any idea how many different folks you talked to?
Oh, I don't really have a count of it. I don't really keep track
Quite a few of them?
Yeah. A lot of people informally, you know, people I just meet and start talking to.
And then they
start telling me about something that happened to them.
See, you're one of the few people I know that have put together the connection between UFOs and Bigfoot.
Right.
And you were telling me something about there are a lot of people that you talked to that had experienced seeing these hominoids or whatever they're called near UFOs or actually flying in them at one time, right?
Well, not people I've personally talked to.
Oh,
but
just
in the literature.
Research
Bigfoot
there. Okay.
Research there. There are sightings. Where people have seen them together or in the same area at different times.
So you haven't talked a whole lot, but you have actually talked to people in this area, Upper Michigan, that have seen these different things, right?
Right. I've talked to a number of witnesses up here who have seen Bigfoot, seen UFOs too.
All right. So what do you got there? You got something for me? Okay. Somebody's handing me something. Okay. Sorry. Getting back to this. I'll edit that part out. Where were we? We're talking about the UFOs. Oh, yeah. Your mother, were you telling me something? She saw something recently or what?
Yeah, recently she saw what might have been a Bigfoot.
Might have been.
Well, you know, it can be hard to tell unless you get a really good look.
What was it, a bear?
No, it was too tall and thin to be a bear.
Was it an ape?
Unless somebody released their pet gorilla out there.
Was it a man in a gorilla suit?
Doubtful out here.
So what else could it be?
Yeah, that's the thing. You go through all the, could it be this, could it be that? Well,
Where was this and how did this happen?
She was behind the house riding her horse. Mm-hmm. And she happened to look off into the woods and saw a tall, thin, brown, hairy figure walk from one tree to behind another tree.
Now, that wasn't your dad, was it?
No, he was in the house. Can't blame him. He was in the house.
I don't think he'd want to be called a hairy figure. So don't tell him I said that. So, and it was just for a moment, right?
Just for a moment.
Now, you also said that you had your horses, like there's been interaction with them as well?
Right, they've had very intricate braids turn up in their manes.
And you don't think it's the neighbors messing around with you?
No, I don't think so.
And why would Bigfoot do that? Why would the Bigfoot mess with the mane and braid their manes?
Well, why not? Why do we do things like that? I mean, we take our horses and you know, do things with their manes to make them look pretty. Things like that, especially girls. You know, we girls like to do things like that to pretty up our animals.
Wouldn't you be freaked out if you came out of the house one day and there's Bigfoot riding your horse? Wouldn't that freak Would that freak you out a little bit?
Well, you know, there have been a few times where they showed up with marks on their backs as if someone had sat on them.
Really? That is interesting. Maybe they did. Anyway, we got off the topic a little bit. Let's get back to your book. Now, this book that you wrote, you mentioned in here about DNA. You know, and we've been hearing lately about DNA being this incredible, now that they can understand it, that they could basically convict somebody with DNA evidence or they can set them free. And you're saying it's not that It's not that infallible. It's not accurate, 100% accurate, is it?
When you're talking about forensics, like with crimes, trying to convict people, you have the problem of contamination, for one thing. And there's a story from Germany. They had it for 10 years. They were looking for a serial killer they called the Phantom of Heilbronn. And it was a woman. The DNA they collected from crime scenes was female. But some of the witnesses to the crimes described a man. So they thought they had a cross-dressing serial killer who they couldn't catch. And then they would arrest some people for being accomplices. But the accomplices would say they didn't know anything about this cross-dressing phantom. And then recently, they took another look at it and found out it was contamination. That the cotton swabs they used to collect DNA evidence were contaminated. So they were looking for this phantom, and it turns out the woman whose DNA they had was a woman who worked in a Bavarian factory that made the cotton swabs.
Oh, really?
So it's funny in one way, and it's also sad in another way, because here they were spending 10 years.
But the DNA was accurate, though, right?
Yeah, they got DNA from it, but it was contaminated.
So I'm saying the actual DNA itself, the reading, whatever my DNA reading is, if they found that somewhere, that would be accurate.
Maybe, maybe not.
You still think that that may not be 100%.
Well, DNA also degrades over time, so it depends how long ago.
Not my DNA, Lisa. My DNA goes
on. You got super DNA.
Super. You've heard of it? Yes. So, you know, and that's, you know, here I'm thinking all these people that have been released that were found innocent or people that have been convicted. There might be a little, I mean, that's not what your book is really saying, but that is something to think about.
Yes, because especially if you're talking about a crime that happened years ago.
It may not
they
be.
Collected evidence at the time, but it's been sitting around.
Yeah.
You know, have they preserved it correctly? Has the DNA degraded? You know? And then there's the problem of, could you create fake DNA?
That's true.
To frame somebody, and actually some Israeli scientists have discovered they could create fake DNA. And frame a certain person by creating artificial DNA that is just like that person's.
That's
DNA.
Interesting. Boy, that really does make me think. We're going to talk some more in just a moment. We'll get back to the book, I promise. Lisa Scheel is my guest this week on Out There.
Out there. Out there. Out there.
Thanks for listening to the show. Once again, if you somehow, well, maybe it was divine guidance that brought you to this program, or maybe it was immaculate reception. Somehow you picked this up through your TV. Anyway, you can find my site on the internet at outthere.podbean.com. I notice now I got over 500 subscribers. Thank you. Thanks for subscribing to this program. And I'm guessing a lot of you download the program. Now, you can also find me through the Braver Institute if you go to www.braverinstitute.com. Thanks to Wade Braver, I'm linked to that and linked to other sites as well. I thank you for listening.
It's out there, out there, out there, out there.
All right. Thanks for joining us on Out There, Lisa Scheel. Is once again my guest, The Evolution Conspiracy, and it's volume one. That means there's going to be more. Chances are, I would think when you put volume one on there, Lisa, probably more to come, right?
Yeah, there's going to be two and three.
Okay. So now, it's really a debatable subject, isn't it? Evolutionary theories. I don't care which side of it you're on. It's really a big debate, and there's really no concrete evidence anywhere.
Right.
You can't say that it exists, and you almost really can't say that it doesn't exist, right?
Right. And in fact, I'm not saying that evolution is completely wrong. I'm just saying that it's not an absolute fact, like
you're just,
the scientists say it is.
You're just trying to cause trouble. That's what you're trying to do, aren't you, Lisa? No, I mean, remember that author, I can't remember his name, was it Michael Cremo? Is that the one? Is that the fella?
Forbidden Archaeology.
Yeah, I had him on, and then you were on right after that, or vice versa. I thought that was kind of neat, because you both were talking about similar things.
In fact, he provided a little blurb about my book.
Yeah, he did. What did he say about your book?
He liked it.
Well, that's always good. That's always good. So, I was going to ask you, if we didn't evolve, and you're not going to probably answer because you give me a scientific answer, then how did we get here? How did we get here?
Well,
do you have any theories?
My personal opinion with no evidence.
Sure, whatever you want to, respond to.
I think probably aliens had something to do with it.
You think we were put here by other beings?
When you look at how strange DNA is, especially human DNA, and how there will be a sudden explosion of life forms, very strange life forms, and then they'll get killed off, and then there'll be another explosion of very strange life forms, and then they get killed off, and various things like that. It seems like somebody's playing around.
Do you think that, and this is what I want to ask you, because there was a book called The Gods of Eden, and the author suggested that there were these different beings that have been around for a long time that kind of created life here. And for some people, that's an uncomfortable thought. But it's just a thought, okay?
Right.
And because I believe we were created by a creator and then kind of went forth and did stuff in the universe, you know?
Right. Well, even if you say aliens created life on Earth, you still have a problem. Who created the aliens?
Yeah, who created them? Who created them, Lisa?
And ultimately, I think you have to get back to God.
Okay, so why would God create them so they could create us?
He wouldn't create. Who knows? He didn't necessarily create them so they could create us. Just
you know, I don't.
Life.
I'm feeling a little tired today. Why don't you guys just go take care of that for me?
Well, there are various ideas about God. You know, there are other people who think God is very hands-on and you know, influences every aspect of life, and then there are the people who think, well, God is just kind of a divine force that's out there and kicks things off, but doesn't. It doesn't control every aspect of it.
Is that the way you look at it?
Yeah, that's the way I look at it.
That's the way I look at it, too. I see it as this being of love and energy, I guess, more than anything. If I had to describe it, I don't think you can describe it. And truly, if you love something, if you truly, truly love something, you allow it to be, is the way I look at it. And so what's the best thing he can do, or she can do for us? Allow us to be, right?
Right.
Greatest freedom there is. Oh, no, you follow these rules. Okay. So that's just the way I look at it. That's the way you see it. So if these beings, and here's the question that comes to my mind, because I read this also in The Gods of Eden and some other books. Do you think they deliberately, if they created these races, do you think they destroyed them as well?
Oh, you mean humans?
Yeah, well, if they created the humans and the other races, the dinosaurs and these other things.
It could be they killed them off, or it could be, you know, natural causes.
Would you think it was, I mean, because don't you?
Obviously, if you're talking about aliens creating and manipulating life in that way,
right.
They would have to be millions or perhaps billions of years ahead of us technologically. And so we probably couldn't even understand what they would be capable of doing. So maybe they could aim an asteroid at Earth because they're tired of the life forms they created. Let's start all over again.
You mean there's like a T-Rex down there, and I'm tired of him gobbling up all the cavemen I keep making. Jeez, oh man. I want to send a few, this big asteroid down on the planet and get rid of all these things down there and boom, start over again. So that's kind of your theory, your possible belief on
right,
that.
Right, or maybe they could make severe weather that would kill off a bunch of life forms.
Hmm. Interesting. And some of it could just be natural too, right?
Yeah.
So that is very interesting that you share that with me, because that's kind of how I've gone in that direction more and more about, you know, there was a time in my life I believed like what I was taught in when I was a kid in the church, you know, and God created us all and Adam and Eve and the whole story through there. But I always had this in the back of my mind. Now, why, if he loved us so much, why does he keep doing these things to us, you know? It's like, why is he doing that? You did not do what I said you to do, therefore, boom, dead, turn you into stone. And I guess I couldn't understand that, if you truly love something. That's where I have a difficulty with it. So getting back to your book, Lisa, how much is this book going to set me back if I want to buy this?
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that.
How much is it going to set me back, your book?
It costs less than $10.
What? That's a steal. And where can I find this book?
Find it on Amazon.com, or you can go to the publisher's website, SlipDownMountain.com. And if you go to EvolutionConspiracy.com, there's a link to buy it on Amazon.
Yeah, and some of the things you touch on, evolution fails to meet standard criteria for a fact or a theory. And that's true. You know, if you really, I guess, do the research on it, right, there's really no way to prove that. You told me before, and this is a good point you mentioned, how come we've never seen something evolving in all the time that we've been here?
And the evolutionists like to say, oh, we see things evolving all the time, and they point to plant species that have changed a little bit, something like that, where what they're really talking about is adaptation.
Right.
The life form is adapting to its environment, but it hasn't really changed.
No, it
it's
hasn't.
It's still a plant, you know, like the finches on the Galapagos Islands, which were famously studied by Darwin. They're still all finches.
Yeah.
You know, and they're assigned to different species, but they interbreed, and you know, they have different shaped beaks and things like that, but they're still all finches. They have not turned into anything else.
Yeah, they haven't turned into dinosaurs or vice versa, right?
Right.
That's what the dinosaurs...
The idea that things adapt to their environment, that's pretty obvious. You can see that everywhere around you. But is that really evolution in the sense of creating new forms of life?
Right. It's adaptation. And you can notice that within people, even. If they live in different parts of the world, they have adapted to their surroundings.
Right, like people who live in the Andes Mountains, high altitudes, you know, they have developed certain physical traits that let them breathe easier up there.
There was a man who I watched the show, they did a story on him, I don't know if it was on Discovery Channel, one of the channels, National Geographic, but he lived with these wolves. He had like a...
Oh, right, I've seen that show, yeah.
And he could actually eventually eat the same things as them. Now, you think our bodies were not could not handle that, you know? But he talked about how you build up an adaptation, and so he was eating raw meat of animals that were just dragged in or had been sitting there a while. And I'm thinking, there's no way in heck I want to do that. But he was able to do that.
Right. Well, if you think back to cavemen, they probably ate a lot of raw meat.
Yeah.
Before they invented fire.
Right. So, and just like another good example, if you go to Mexico, they say, don't drink the water. Yet how come the people that live there don't get sick?
Yeah, they're used to it.
Their bodies have adapted to it, right?
Well, we're used to very clean water, and it's been sanitized, so we're more sensitive to it.
More sensitive
to
it.
We don't have immunity.
And they're probably, maybe it's better to be exposed to some of those things, right?
Right. In some ways, we are trying to make things too clean sometimes.
Yeah. It's like with this flu thing going around, everybody's afraid of it. Well, maybe there was a day when mom would expose you to chicken pox, expose you to these things so your body would build up immunity to it.
Well, that's basically what most vaccines do. They expose you to a little bit of something so that you get a mild case and then you're immune to it.
Right. So pick up the book, buy several copies, give them out as Halloween gifts, give them out as Christmas gifts. Give them out as Easter gifts, any holiday that comes up. It's The Evolution Conspiracy by Lisa Scheel. And Lisa does her homework. Matter of fact, she does it really well, really well. I haven't come across these terms since I was in biology class, some of these terms that I noticed in here. Matter of fact, I forgot a lot of the stuff that you bring up in here. But you really do go very thoroughly through and look at many, many different things.
Don't right, you? And there's a glossary in the back if you forget what a term means.
Yeah, that helps, because I don't remember a lot of it. But you also say that no one can satisfactorily define what a species is, which is really, how can you? And the definition of evolution is so vague, you say it's meaningless, right? You say it's, how can you define it? You really can't, can you?
Right, well, they define evolution as descent with modification, which is just a big fancy term for change.
So
genetic changes that get passed down to your offspring. And if that's all it is, then it's no longer this spectacular, stunning idea. And it can't really explain the diversification and the origins of life because we don't know what their DNA was like. All we have is fossils going back, you know, hundreds of thousands, millions, billions of years. All we have is fossils.
Yeah.
So we don't know. There is no evidence that genetic changes getting passed down cause the creation of vastly different forms of life.
Hmm.
We know that it can help us adapt to our environment, but there's no proof that it causes the creation of very different forms of life.
One other question, and we're just about out of time here. So it's called The Evolution Conspiracy. So that suggests to me that there's this great cover-up.
Well, there are different kinds of conspiracies. You know, there are the kind where there's a group of little old men meeting in secret, exchanging handshakes. And then there's the kind where people are not necessarily getting together to plot to do something, but they're all independently working toward the same goal. And that's what a lot of these evolutionists do, especially the atheist evolutionists, is they're out there just hammering the idea into everyone that evolution is a fact. You have no right to question it. And if you question it, we're going to ridicule and attack you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the conspiracy, the way they attack everyone who disagrees or expresses the slightest doubt. If they express a religious belief.
Mm. You know, so you don't think, like I asked you last time, you don't think it has anything to do with the grassy knoll? No?
No, I don't think so.
Well, Lisa, it's been a pleasure as usual. You're very pleasant to talk to and fun to talk to, and I enjoy that you were able to get back with me and talk about your new book. I hope you get a lot of folks to check it out. The Evolution Conspiracy, Volume 1, Exposing Life's Inexplicable Origins and the Cult of Darwin. You have I hope you have a lot of book sales and have a great time up in Jacobsville.
Well, thank you.
Thanks for coming on.
Out there, created by Kevin MacLeod.